So I was an intern there, along with 5 other Dominican interns and 2 other American interns. This is the first year that Time Ministries did an equal program. So the Dominicans were actually working alongside the Americans, and we combined, and we had the same role. So that was a really cool experience to be able to work so closely with them, and it was a learning experience with all of us because we had to really blend our 2 cultures together. And when you're working together, it's a little difficult, but it was really, really good. So I want to talk a little bit about the American interns. They were both from Iowa. They didn't know each other there. But I ended up being absolutely best friends with the girl I was able to work with there. Her name's Aaliyah, and she's my age, and she's actually still in the Dominican Republic. She's going to be there for a year teaching at a school there in Jarabacoa. She just left today to move 2 hours away from Time Ministries and to more of a rural area. And she's going to be teaching an assistant teacher for a 3rd grade classroom, but also a substitute teacher for the school. So whenever they need her, she fills in. She speaks fluent Spanish. And she was really just such a joy to work with, and I learned so much from her throughout the whole process. Okay, so our role was basically to serve the American teams that came in. One of my favorite quotes from Katie Davis, a missionary in Uganda, is the only thing better than loving your neighbor is enabling your neighbor to love their neighbor. And that's what we had the privilege of doing. When these American teams came in to serve and to build chapels and host VBSs, we basically enabled them to do that. So in the morning, we would wake up a little bit earlier and get everything ready, and we would get all their ministry stuff ready for VBS and get all that loaded and make sure there was water where there needed to be water because you can't drink out of the tap and just little things like that. So this summer, what we accomplished, we did 10 chapels. So, and that's all over the Dominican Republic. A lot of times, churches that get started in these small villages don't have the money to really provide their church body with a place to meet. So they would meet outside and under trees or in the pastor's house. So it was really cool to just see the joy of that community and that whole community come together and just watch you build this chapel on the last day and put everything up, put the walls together. We also did 2 roof projects. So with larger churches that started like a cement building, it's a really common thing in the Dominican Republic to start building with the money that you have, but then you have to stop until you get more money. So you'll see a lot of times cement buildings that'll come up to there with nothing more, and they just have rebar sticking up out of them. But when they have the money to later build back on, they'll go back and do that. So for some of these churches that were able to build the building, they weren't able to build the roof, we were able to do that. We also built a kitchen, an office, and 25 benches, a little over 25 benches for one big church. Okay, so in the morning, okay. So these are all the interns. The American interns are on the right. That's Aaliyah and Nick, the ones that are from Iowa. And then those are the Dominican interns. From your left, that's J.J. Fama, which is Francisco Alberto Mambrú Abrea, Aaliyah Kenny, that's me, and then Nick and Aniel. Aniel was only 16 years old, so he was the youngest one out of the group. But we all worked together like brothers and sisters, and we were an absolute family. So it was really, that was one of the most difficult things to leave, because we lived together for 9 weeks, so we were definitely brothers and sisters. Okay, so, so the VBSs that we did in the afternoons, we would travel to all different sites. Every week, we went to a different place. And sometimes the VBS would be 350 kids, 400 kids, and then sometimes it would be just 20 or 30 kids. But overall, me personally, the amount of kids I probably led worship for was over 1,000 children this summer. So that was really cool, because that was my role at VBS, was being able to lead the worship at the beginning of the VBS. I also had the privilege of leading worship in the morning. So we woke up at 6 a.m. every morning, And by 6:30, we were on the roof for devotionals. So Nick and I led the devotion, led the worship, and then one of the missionaries would come in to lead the devotion every morning for the teens before they started to work. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the teens and our typical day. So we had 11 teams that came in, probably around 400 Americans that were able to come and serve God this summer. So the intern's job was to take care of those teams that came in. The typical week that they came was about 8 days, and their typical day was 6 to 10:30. And that's roughly, because usually our ministry would last longer than expected. So usually you're up from about 6 to 11, 11:30. The morning starts off with devotions on the roof, and then we have breakfast, and then by 8 you're downstairs with the construction till 12:30, then you eat lunch, and then you go out to your VBS site and do ministry or evangelism, whatever. They're there to do baseball, that kind of stuff. So through that, I just learned how far you can push your body to serve God. Because I think a lot of times here, when I am here, you'll do a VBS for a couple hours and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so exhausted. Like, you want to go home and sleep right away. But there, you go 24/7 and you don't stop. A lot of times when we had a group leave, the next one came in less than 24 hours. So usually the next day we pick up the next group and start off on a foundation at 3 o'clock in the morning. So you didn't get much sleep, but it was amazing how God just gave you the energy to keep going. That picture is when I was able to pick up my first group at the airport. So each week we'd pick them up there, and they would come back to time. It consisted of a group of pretty much all middle school girls, and there's a couple guys. But that was a really cool experience to see that God can really use anybody to do his work. Even with construction, these girls worked hard and used power drills all week, so it was really cool. Okay, so a chapel day, at the end of the week, each day you make panels, so for this chapel. So you're making wall panels, window panels, everything that will come together on the final day, and I'm sure the team shared a little bit about that. But on chapel day, you wake up typically anywhere from 3 to 5. We wake up and we go to our site. And all day you build there. And my role consisted every week of building trusses, so putting the two trusses together for the roof, and then windows. So each week that's what I would do. And I would help get a team to go do that with me. It usually takes us we try to get started by 8, and then it usually takes us to at least 2 to get it finished. And so we're usually home by like 5 or something like that. But my longest day was 3 a.m. to 10 p.m., so 19 hours. But that site was like 4 hours away, and we ended up getting like a lot of vehicle problems and things like that, which happened often. So then that night, once I got home from that day, we had a big medical problem. So we stayed up till 2 in the morning praying for him, and then woke up at 6 the next day. Okay, so, yeah. Sorry. All right, so that's pretty much what I did there. Now I want to talk about God moments. This is the exciting part. Okay, so there's nine specific moments that I remember this summer where I was like, wow, God really showed up there. And the first one happened before I even left. So before I left for my trip, I was reading in Joshua. And we ended up studying Joshua in church, too, so that was pretty cool. But Joshua 9, of course, stuck out to me. And it's, I repeat, be strong and brave. Don't be afraid and don't panic, for I, the Lord your God, am with you in all you do. So that was kind of my theme for the summer. I read that book, and it says, be strong and courageous, be strong and brave in it, over and over and over again. So I knew God was saying, listen, Hannah, this is what I've called you to do, and if you do it, you have to do it and be strong and be brave and courageous, because you know that I go before you, and I'm the Lord your God. So when I was saying goodbye to my family And I knew what was going to be ahead. I knew that I'd have a quick turnover to go to college. Through it all, I was kept saying, I have to be strong and courageous because God has a plan, this plan for a reason. So actually, the last Sunday before I left, Mr. Gary's Sunday school class was about that verse. He was talking about being strong and being courageous. So I thought that was really cool. That was definitely a God moment. And then I went to the sermon, and Pastor Bob mentioned the same thing. So God was definitely confirming that, okay, Hannah, I'm sending you here, and it may be way out of your comfort zone, but this is my plan for you, so you have to do it. So that was definitely a God moment. And the second one was meeting Mario's family. So he was another intern for a while. And so the first week I was there, I think it was like the third day, we broke off and the Americans went to one of the Dominicans' houses for dinner. So I went to Mario's house for dinner and Fama came with me. And I met his mom and she told me all about her life and about her family's life. And their dad left them to go to Boston with another woman that he met. So he's remarried and he lives in Boston. And he rarely talks to the kids, but he always tells them about all the stuff that he has. And he never sends them any money back. So they know that he has a nice house and they know that he has a nice car. And they're in the Dominican and they're struggling for money and for food. But even then, they even were talking about how they were struggling, but they kept offering more food and more juice and everything they had to me. And that just showed the culture and just the love that they had just for people, because they had just met me. But they said this saying. This was like their favorite saying to say in their family. And it says, tranquila que todo saldrá bien. And it means, relax, everything is going to be okay. And they say that all the time. And throughout the summer, Mario said that to me all the time when I was getting stressed. And it just showed that Miss Raquel, his mom, God gave her the strength to deal with the circumstances that she was in. And she didn't let that hinder her at all. She was so happy. She sat there and talked to me. She was talking about how both of her kids were in ministry. Both of them were serving in the church. And how much God has blessed her. That bad things will come and trials will come. But God is good, and everything's going to be okay. So it was really cool. And then when I left, she gave me a verse, and it was 1 Corinthians 16:13. And it says, stay alert, stand firm in the faith, show courage, be strong. And that was after the third day I'd been there. So I thought that was really cool. That was another God moment. And for the rest of the summer, I called her my Dominican mother. And she always ran up to me in the church and said, oh, my amor. So she was really, really sweet. Okay, the third one. Can we go to the last picture? Yeah. This is Gavi. I met Gavi when he was 5 years old, and in this picture, he's 7. So I was able to see him again. And right when I pulled up in the bus, I saw his face, and I was like, I think that's him. I think that's him. And I walked outside, and I said, I called his name, and then I said, do you remember me? And he looked up, and he said, Hannah. And he gave me the biggest hug. And I just had tears in my eyes because it was so cool to see that the impression that he left on me, I apparently left some impression on him to remember my name. And he just stuck by my side the whole time. So that was really cool to see. And I was also able to meet another little girl that I knew, Angelica, from the first trip I was there. I saw a girl that looked just like her. So I went up to her and I was like, I asked her if she was on the Angelica with the little English that I know. She was like, no. And I was like, well, do you know her? And she's like, yeah. I was like, is she your sister? And she's like, yeah. So I got to meet her little sister, and that was really cool. So that was definitely another God moment. So another one is this village called Cercadilla. So I was able to go there 2 or 3 times this summer. And there's a missionary that works full-time there. Her name's Ina. And what she does is she goes into the village and mainly works with the women and the children. But she's taught the women how to make bags and bracelets and keychains and headbands and all these things that they can sell to a lot of the missionaries that come in and to other places in the village. But for the past 2 years, I have bought these bags and these bracelets, and each one has a tag on it with the lady's name that made it. And you're supposed to pray for them. So I had, and I was able to go to that village, and It was for the kids' ministry, but a lot of the women went there just to be able to be involved with the worship. So they would stay for the worship at first. And before they got started, they took prayer requests. And before each one said their prayer request, they said their name. And I was able to recognize so many of the names of the women that were there and that I had bought bags from years before. So that was really cool. And it was just so amazing to see how one woman's faithfulness changed that village. I mean, you had a village of outcasts, of people who were considered prostitutes and just like low life, poor. And you had a village of people just praising the name of God to the top of their lungs. With smile on their faces, no matter what their conditions. They lived in a really, really bad area of town. And it was just amazing to see how one woman's faithfulness to God just gave them hope, was able to show the love of God to them. And it was really, really, really cool. Okay, so the fifth God moment was I was able to share with the youth group. So each group that comes in, usually has at least one team meeting on the roof just to kind of debrief and talk about what's happened this week, what the kids have learned, what the people have learned that are serving. So the kids were all sharing, and they asked me what was the hardest thing that God has had to teach me, or the hardest thing that I had to learn. And I said it was just dealing with feeling inadequate to be there, because there were so many people that were there and knew the language and knew had been there before, knew construction well. And I struggled for a while and just saying, like, I know this ministry doesn't need me here. I know that God doesn't necessarily need me here. But I was so humbled by the fact that even though God didn't need me, he wanted me there because he loved me enough to use me. And I was able to be used in a big way this summer of just playing a small part in the chapels and the VBS, because not because God needs me, but because God loves me. And that was a God moment, because later that week when they went home and all added me on Facebook and things like that, three of them posted what God taught me this week, and it was all about how God doesn't need them, but he loves them enough to use them. So I thought that was really cool. And then I had another boy come up to me later and say how he never thought about it like that. And it just, you could see just their gratefulness to serve, how they just felt blessed to be able to serve. And that's what God did for me this summer, is not to feel like, oh, I'm doing this for these people, but God is blessing me by allowing me to do this. So I was able to work with a few Dominican women who helped out with time ministries, and two of their names were Glenda and Perla. And Perla is about my age, and Glenda's a little bit older. She just got married. But there was one day that we had off where the groups had left, and so they took me to their house, and their mom was laying in bed really sick. So we walked in, Ali and I walked in, and immediately kind of backed up because we were like, well, we'll let her sleep. But she was like, no, 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 come here. And she made us lay in bed with her. So we were laying in bed with her. And at first, nobody was really talking or saying anything because I don't speak Spanish. And it was just pretty weird. But we were laying there, and she pulls out her laptop and starts showing us pictures. She has her master's degree in education from professors that came to the Dominican from America. And she was laying in bed sick, like, you know, she didn't feel like talking, but she sat there and she shared her heart with us about her school. And she teaches at a poor, poor, poor rural school, I think about an hour away. But she was showing us pictures of 11, 12, 13-year-old kids who couldn't read still. And she was talking about how it's so hard to keep them in school because they have to work. But she laid there with, like, almost tears in her eyes just talking about these kids. And you could just see the love that she had for them because of the love she had for God. And it was really cool to be able to experience that and just hear about her heart. Because that's what I would love to do one day, is to be able to teach and help kids like that. But to see her being able to do it is really, 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 really cool. That was a really, really cool moment. This isn't as heartwarming, but, okay, so We had this boy named Matt in one of the groups. He was 18 years old, and he had a really traumatic experience with an imminent group of like. So he actually had a fly come into his ear, and it kind of just stayed there. So it flew into his ear, and it stayed there, so that they finally, it was like 3 hours later, and it finally came out. So they took him to the doctor because it had scratched around, and he was in a lot of pain. So he went to the hospital, and they gave him, like, ear drops and said, okay, you're fine. And they sent him back. So, his ear's constantly bleeding walking around. So ear drops were just coming straight out. It wasn't doing anything. But this guy was so tough, and he still went to chapel day the next day, which was 4 hours away. So he rode this bus ride for 4 hours, built the chapel, came back, and was, literally in screaming pain. And so we were like, okay, we have to take him back because something's wrong. And then his group leader, Keith, was about to put eardrops in before they left, and he saw larvae squirming around in his ear. So he didn't tell Matt because that probably would have been a little bad. So they took him to the hospital again, and none of the hospitals would even look at him. So they were driving around the country trying to find a doctor that would see him. And it took a really long time. And finally they called the pastor just to pray. And the pastor goes, oh, I actually have an ear doctor that I know. He's one of my friends. So he woke this guy up. I think by this point it was like midnight. He woke him up, and the pastor came and saw Matt. The pastor's friend came and saw Matt. And he looked at him, and he was like, yeah, there's larvae, and they're buried into his ear. And he was like, and larvae pretty much eat whatever they're laid in. So it was really, really bad. And so we just prayed for a long time, and we all texted out to our families, and was like, please pray. And so they were pretty much, they tried to pull a few out, but they couldn't really do much. So they sent him home again with more medicine, and then the next day, he was just in screaming pain, and he had to keep the gauzes in the ear, and he knew that his flight was the next day. So there's no way he would have gotten through customs with a bleeding ear and larvae around in it. So we were like, okay, we've got to find somebody who can take it out. So we finally found an ear doctor who could take it out, and he had a scope, and he was really professional, and that was a blessing to be able to find somebody who would even look at it. So I want to read the journal entry I have for that day, because it was amazing how God worked. We were scared that Matt was going to have to stay with us, because there was no way he was going to get on the flight until all these larvae came out. But God really worked. And he ended up healing Matt and getting all the larvae out where he was able to go on the flight. So it was such a blessing that God healed, because none of us could do anything. It was such a powerless situation. But I'll go ahead and read. I said, I don't understand why God allowed that to happen, but I do know that this experience shaped Matt's life. It is humbling to realize that something as seemingly insignificant as a fly can alter your life so much. He felt so powerless, along with the rest of us who could do absolutely nothing to help. All we could do is rely fully in God's goodness and faithfulness to save us from a situation that was far too large for us to handle. At one point, we thought Matt's life was in danger because the doctors suspected it was the kind of bug that buries into the blood vessels. But tonight, once again, God's love saved. God is so big. He speaks every language, knows every heart, and cares about each one of his creations so dearly. It is scary to be in a country where there is not an abundance of qualified doctors, and Matt's case was rejected by many. But Matt has a father who can heal any sickness, and that's what God did tonight. He healed Matt, and it was a miracle. That was a big God moment. We stayed up for a long time praying, and God answered our prayers. And just the way he was able to keep Matt so calm during that situation. I mean, his leader, Keith, said that he had never seen anybody in so much pain in his life, and he had seen his wife give childbirth. So God was in it the whole time, no matter if we could do anything or not. Okay, so the next moment is a little bit better. So we built 10 chapels this summer. And on the last chapel day, I had a memorial chapel group. So they came because the father had committed suicide. And he loved coming to the Dominican Republic to work. So the whole family came, and they were there to serve and build a chapel in his honor. But most of the family wasn't saved. So it was a unique dynamic, and it was different than what I was used to, because I was used to working with Christians who were coming on a mission trip to proclaim the name of God. But these were Christians who were, or these were people who were just hurting. So we were, all the interns working with that group were nervous that week, but we also knew, like, what an opportunity. And it was, that whole week was a God moment, because you could see slowly God was opening up their hearts. And we were all able to have a lot of conversations with them that I think made them all think. So that was really good. But I want to talk about their chapel day. So we dedicate each chapel to the pastor with like a little ceremony. So we hand over the keys to the pastor, and the group leader says a little bit, and then the pastor says a little bit. And when he handed over the keys to the pastor just started just bawling, crying. And during his little speech, he said, you know, today my dreams have been, this is my dream. It's been fulfilled. And he said, in our prayers, we've been praying every day for 2 years for this building. And God has done that today. And I just thought of how cool it is to finally be able to be used by God to answer prayers instead of continually asking God for things. I feel like a lot of times we're not able to be on the other side because we don't try to be. God wants to use us to answer prayers. He wants to use us to work in other people's lives. But a lot of times we're so busy asking for our requests that we forget that there's other people who need things too and who need God. It was a really bittersweet day for both that family, who were all in tears dedicating that chapel, and for the interns who knew that this summer was over. So I'd like to read that one, but my little sticky note fell. Hold on 1 second. So I'm going to read my journal entry for that day. Today we built the last chapel of the summer. It was a really good one to end on. There was so much joy, but also so much pain and sadness. It was bittersweet for the interns because it's sad that this part of our lives are over. The summer has come to an end, and for now, so has our mission of the Dominican Republic. However, there's nothing sweeter than handing over the keys to a crying pastor whose dreams and prayers have been answered. It was most definitely a hard day for the Plant family. The loss of a husband, father, brother, and uncle brought so much pain and brokenness. It's hard to watch because for so many of them, they don't have a relationship with the only one who can mend their hearts. It proves that God can use anyone to accomplish his work. I pray that this week will shape their hearts and their lives and draw their hearts back to the Lord. I also pray that he will hold my heart as I attempt to adjust back to life in the States. Can't express in words how hard it's going to be to leave this life behind, but I know that this life is not mine in the first place, so I will follow where he leads. God worked in really, really amazing ways this summer, and I've been asked a lot in the few days I've been home, like, aren't you so happy to be home, and you get your bed, and you get air conditioning, and all that's really nice, but it's so much nicer to be able to serve God with all that you are in every minute. And that's what I'm striving for here, is just to have and find that purpose in the everyday. So to not sleep the day away and sleep in, but to go out and find where God wants me to be. Because for right now, I know it's here, and I know it's in college, but I know that he wants to use me in the magnitude that I was able to work there. So that's what I'm striving for. So the last God moment is just kind of what God taught me. In the beginning of my journal, I wrote, "This is one of the hardest days I've ever had to leave my family and to leave all this behind and to go to a country where I don't know anybody." But then on the last day of my journal in the back, it says, "This is the hardest day I've ever had. I can't believe I've got to leave this country." So Luke 14:26 really stood out to me. "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and his mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple." I learned that God's will is not for us to become so attached to family and to people and to places, because this life is not our own to live. This life is not our home. So we shouldn't be scared to leave anywhere, because God's always with us. So I want to share a promise, last journal entry. But this is the last one I wrote. "So this is it. I did it only by God's strength. I lived in the Dominican Republic for 9 weeks, and now I'm sitting on a plane preparing for takeoff. I'm nervous to see what I'm going back to. I know it's not home, because I no longer have a home, except with Jesus in heaven. But for now, I have no home and two families. I'm going to miss my brothers and sisters in Christ so dearly. Sorry. Saying goodbye to them was so difficult. I held it together until the very end when I hugged Aaliyah. God is continually reminding me to let go of this world and the people of this world and draw close to Him. I said goodbye to my best friend today, and it was hard, really hard. We held each other crying for a while, and then I went to say goodbye to the last person, my little brother Aniel. Right when he hugged me, I started crying again, which made him cry too. He also wrote me a little note and hid it in my bag, which made me bawl once again while on the way to the airport. They are all so sweet, and I'm going to miss them like crazy. Life without them will be really sad, but I'm praying my heart will adjust fast, and I pray the same for them. I'm so grateful to God for allowing me to have such an amazing, blessed experience. To say it's a summer I'll never forget is an understatement. But one thing is for sure, I will never forget my family in the Dominican Republic. And hopefully one day I'll be able to see them all again. If it's not in the Dominican or the U.S., I'll definitely see them in heaven someday." So I want to say thank you to all of you for supporting me and allowing me to go to the Dominican, because I know it's exactly where God wanted me, and He's taught me so, so much. So thank you. Can you also... I just have one prayer request. Aaliyah's still there, and today was a really hard day for her, because she's starting over once again, too. So she's moving where she doesn't know anybody, and she's going to live with a host family. So today is her first night there. So I ask that you guys would please pray for her. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to listen and hear what God did.